Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Retail Refined, a market scale podcast with your host, me, Melissa Gonzalez. Today, I'm excited to introduce you to, if you don't know her already, Elizabeth Price, who is Global Chief Marketing Officer at Anthropologie. Now, to kick off this year, I had the honor of sitting with her on stage to dig into the conversation about her mind and the opportunities of retail, and we're going to share some of those insights with you today. But first, let me introduce Elizabeth a little bit further. As I mentioned, she is the Global Chief Marketing Officer at Anthropologie, a global lifestyle brand that ranges from apparel to home decor to wellness to bridal to shoes to garden. I said on stage, and I mean it today, it's the conversation we don't have that I feel like we have about Target. Like, you walk into Anthropologie and I never walk out with just the top. I'm going to come out with some candles, probably a sheet mask, maybe a throw for my living room. So it's just such a great retail experience that I'm excited to dig in. At Anthropologie, she leads a team that encompasses and executes all brand marketing, direct to consumer, business strategy, customer insights and analytics, editorial content, and across all social, digital, print platforms, online and in stores. So really a comprehensive viewpoint. Prior to this, Elizabeth spent a decade in the beauty industry working for a well-known industry-leading brands and digitally native, such as Estee Lauder, and also served as the chief growth officer at BH Cosmetics. So one of the things I'm going to be excited to dig into today is her diversity and experience when it comes to retail, not just in the category she's in today, but in beauty and others, and really bring that comprehensive lens to her viewpoints, to her team, to her organization. Elizabeth, thank you so much for spending the time with us today and allowing us to get to know you and the way you think a little bit better.
Oh my gosh, it's a pleasure, Melissa. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so I gave the highest level introduction possible, really letting the audience know the richness of your background. But maybe you can tell the audience a little bit more, you know, just your experience in retail as a whole and what you're bringing to Anthropologie.
Great. So I've been in retail my whole career in some way, shape, or form. And it's ranged between a specialty retail, like where I was at J. Crew, to more luxury retail at Saks Fifth Avenue. Those brands that were more digitally native, as you said, like BH Cosmetics, which was a digitally led beauty brand out of LA, to more established beauty brands like Estee Lauder companies. So I've had a full range, but I would say the one thing, the thread that sort of connects them all is its goal to be very intimate with the customer. Mm-hmm. Whether you're in the luxury space or the specialty space or the beauty space or the fashion space, every one of those brands definitely put a priority on understanding who the customer was and making sure they were meeting those customers where best. And now I feel like pinching the moment always that I get to work for Anthropologie, Anthropologie Group, and the brands and the customers that love this, love the store environment, that love all the brands that we carry, that love coming to the store by themselves, that love coming to the store with their moms or their daughters. I mean, it's a great opportunity to really engage with more and more customers throughout their lives, frankly.
I can attest to that because that's me. As I mentioned, I'm not just saying because I'm on with you, I go. I know that I'm discovering new things, and my daughter very willingly joins me on that adventure every time and is 9 years old and walking out with something.
That's what we love to hear. I mean, we want to make sure that they find that joy early on in their life. And honestly, we celebrate just walking in and enjoying and not necessarily walking out with anything. You know, I think very, very few people actually do walk out with nothing. But the reality is that people, we want people to just find this store and find our site and or our store as a place of discovery and a place of fun and finding both products and brands that they may not have known about beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, let's dig into that a little bit. As I mentioned to the audience, you know, and you kind of gave that through line of intimacy with the customer. And you also very much believe in data and insights, which we're going to dig into a little bit as well. But maybe we can talk, maybe we'll start with there, because that data and magic, right, is something we spoke about at NRF, and I know something you deeply believe in. Talk about the relationship of that when you make the comment, the intimacy of the customer, and how data and insights really allows you and your team to illuminate opportunities around that.
Sure, sure. Great question. So I think it's very important that data analytics, if you will, is not just held and not just understood within one division in the organization. In fact, it's really very much the insights that power a lot of our thought process and a lot of our strategies. As a company, we are absolutely positively creativity led. Like, we let the creativity of our people, we let the creativity of our customers in terms of, you know, celebrating them discovering new things and celebrating them new ways to wear things and to show things and to live with things. That part we always will put as the number one priority and the number one goal. However, we are very much data informed. It helps us stay focused on what's going to make the most difference to driving our business forward. Mm-hmm. It also is something that is a common language that we can all share within the organization. So I'll give you a great example. A great example is that we just recently launched a new label called Celandine. Mm-hmm. It actually just launched. We are super excited by it. It's all based on providing all of those great items that you're going to want to bring on vacation with you. So you're off to the beach, you're off to the seaside. What are you going to pack your bag with? And we now have a standalone label that is really addressing all of those things, from the swimwear to the cover-up to the sarong to the beach bag to the hat to you name it, all under the Celandine brand. And that way it's thinking about what our customers like to do. We know that our customers love to travel. In fact, more than three quarters of them actually state that they do like to travel, with many of them actually traveling internationally. So this is definitely a very engaged engaged customer who likes to actually explore new places and or visit the same places they may already love. So by recognizing that and then establishing a brand that can really very much suit their needs, we're mm-hmm. super excited by it. But that's a great example of data not necessarily driving our decisions, but certainly informing us as, do we think this is a big idea that we can actually get behind? So we're super excited. We just launched earlier this week. It's on our website right now, and it's also a little pop-up in Miami. So we're super excited with how this came to life.
Well, perfect timing for my winter recess trip to the Cayman. So I'm going to check that out.
Exactly.
But I think it also leans into, you know, especially with the competitive nature of so many options out in the market, how you're providing value, because through the data, you're not just validating she's traveling, but through the data, you can holistically provide value to her around what she needs on her vacation, and simplifying her life.
Yeah, that's what we find. A lot of customers, they come to us because they actually don't want to see a lot more. They want to see an edited assortment of just what's right. And I think that's important distinction. We need to understand who our customer is and how she lives mm-hmm. and how they want to engage with our brand and what they come to our brand for. That doesn't mean that we don't have the right to actually expand across categories that we think we have the right to play in, which we do. Celandine is a great example of going beyond what we might have assumed was our lane of assortment, but it just allows us to actually engage with them in more places and be part of that joy in their lives outside of what they typically come to us for. Back to the data a little bit, though, I think it's important internally in terms of a language. You know, we talk a lot about, especially in data insights and the data analytics part of the team here, that there's a lot of the real data that we are harnessing on a daily basis. We are very, very lucky that our stores allow us to actually have a lot of, you know, proprietary first set data from our customers, which is great. But all of that information, if it just stands on its own and it's not actually sort of filtered or understood, mm-hmm. just becomes noise. Mm-hmm. So the goal is that, how do you take that data and turn it into a so what? So that actually you're in essence filtering it. You're in essence synthesizing it, so it becomes understandable as to what this information is telling us. And usually as few points as possible so that it can really be understood. And then the final part of the equation is, after the what and the so what, is the now what. So then once you have that, what do you do with it? because unless you have real clear understanding about what that information is going to help you do to drive your business, not only within the marketing team, but throughout the team, throughout the entire team, you aren't truly capturing and using the information as it's best leveraged.
No, absolutely. So let's dig into that a little bit too, because it is an iterative process. And I think that that's important. Yeah. And there's a couple aspects to it. So what should we do first? So number one, you talked about marketing and other teams upfront. How are you laying the framework, identifying the right stakeholders to be partners with you as well? Because it's not just your lens that has to study it and figure out this, you know, what, now what, so what?
Yeah. Great question. I would say that this doesn't even necessarily pertain only to the marketing team. Mm-hmm. It actually pertains, I think, to any business. I do believe very strongly that the leadership has to have such strong partnership at the most senior levels so that there is a sense of trust and a sense of understanding and support, so that if the senior leaders are recognizing that there's an opportunity or that they believe there's an opportunity, that information actually filters down across their entire teams. Mm-hmm. So there's already a buy-in at some level of the teams wanting to at least explore further. You know, you might find out down the road that maybe this is, you're going to pivot and you're not going to do exactly what you thought, but you have that understanding up front. So I think that's first and foremost important. The second thing is, once you understand with your shared partners, what is it you're trying to achieve? Mm-hmm. It helps to then limit and focus you in onto the things that are going to matter the most in growing that opportunity, whatever that opportunity is. For us, you know, back to Celandine, was recognizing that we had a group of customers. They were coming to us at certain times of the year for certain things. But did we have the belief that we could actually make that bigger? We also knew that the areas in the U.S. that were growing were some of these more southern regions. There was mm-hmm. this population shifts going on the macro level. How could we capture that more? How could we actually address those needs in a more direct way? So I think it really is very much a combination, and it very much starts with a sense of respect and trust of your fellow partners so that you can actually build these ideas together.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the second part being, how are you working together? Because we talked about this on stage too, is like to get the buy-in and then agree on the success metrics so that, you know, there's not this, well, that wasn't a success because it didn't drive sales. Well, maybe that wasn't the purpose. So what's your process there to creating those thesis and then the associated measurements of success and that evaluation process?
I think it's a great question. And I think that when you're growing a business, part of the, or a division of your business, one of the biggest success metrics is, do we actually cut through and drive awareness of this is a category we want to be in? So in this case, I would say, did I actually grow the traffic to this category in an outsized way relative to what it was before I launched this new category? Mm-hmm. If it was am I actually growing the number of customers who are actually checking out these pages, checking out these categories in a bigger way than before? So it definitely does relate back, but it's not always the sales are number one. Mm-hmm. I mean, we might also have a sales benchmark to start with, so we actually know if it's growing or not over time. In this case, I might say, how many of my customers are actually connecting with this category as a percentage of my total customers relative to what it was beforehand? So I think it's collective. I think you have to believe in the overarching business opportunity first and foremost, and the path to get there may not be so immediate, but it will be sequential and it will be building off of each other.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that mindset takes a good leadership and orchestrator. Like, how do you help coach your teams through thinking in that iterative way and having that always learning mentality?
Well, you know, it helps that it's actually one of our core values as a company to really celebrate creativity. And we also have very much an internal, we are all looking to do better, and we're always looking to test new things. And I think testing is super, super important. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, testing to learn is probably a higher priority than testing to win. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, you want to win, of course. But I think with every test, if you learn definitively what's working better or not, that's a successful test. I think far too often we construct tests with whatever we might be working on mm-hmm. to only try to get a winning result. And I think that if you have a mindset, then that a winning result is a definitive result from the test and not necessarily the result that you thought it was going to be. So, for example, I always think the worst possible result of a test is one that's non-conclusive mm-hmm. because it doesn't give you any more information of how you go forward than what you had before or nothing that you feel enough confidence on. Trying something, you might have a hunch and your hunch might be absolutely positively wrong. But if the test proves out it's absolutely positively without a doubt wrong, that's actually a successful test because mm-hmm. it gave you information you didn't have before. And now you will not make that mistake in a bigger way with potentially a lot more risk involved down the road. I think the other time is never test alone. Mm-hmm. Like I think so many times people want to try things and I'll see how it goes and I'll report back. You know, the bigger the test, the bigger the risk, the more partners you want to have in that test. Mm-hmm. Because you don't want to go at something alone when it's a big risk on the line. And those partners are not just people to sort of support you. They're also people who are going to try to punch holes in your ideas. And you should invite that. You shouldn't try to limit that. You want to invite that. Because if they punch holes and it's something you've not thought of before, but it actually gets you to a better result and a more conclusive result, then that's all better for everybody. So I think, you know, I'm a big believer in testing. I'm a big believer in celebrating testing to learn versus testing to win. Ultimately, if you test to learn and every one of your tests, you're learning more, you will ultimately win on the business, but really making sure that you're testing to learn.
I love that because I try to condition that too with my team. You know, they're going to see blind spots, right? Other people are going to see blind spots you might not see, or maybe they had an experience you didn't have. And that outside point of view is just additive to the opportunities that you have. So I think that that's really important to instill in others. So yes, go ahead.
I also think it's important to know when you should test. Mm-hmm. You know, like we always think about it over the course of the year. You know, we think about fourth quarter. That's not the best time to test many things because, you know, heading into the busiest time of the year means high risk, very high risk if things don't work out as you expect them to. So we always are thinking about what things we want to test in quarter three that we want to then learn from conclusively so we can then apply them in a measured way into quarter four. And again, the bigger the test, the bigger the risk, then make sure your partners are on all aligned and on board because no one likes to have surprises, especially in the most critical time of the year.
For sure. I also think it's a biased time of the year. You know, sometimes we've worked with clients and they'll come to us like, oh, we want to do a pop-up. And I was like, well, if it's for marketing, that's great. But if it's pop-up as a prototype to test market viability, you know, you're going to get biased data because this is prime season versus, another quarter.
Mindset might be different, but they might be more open to be buying things at that time, but not necessarily in other times of the year.
Right, right. So how are you thinking of maybe March in comparison to November? So as you're learning, one of the other things that we've talked about too is that communication and alignment. And so, you know, I love that you're saying that learning's part of it. And but what is a good communication strategy, I guess, to get that back and forth and that alignment as you're testing and iterating?
Oh, another good, really good question. I think what's really important is on the upfront, you have to have a hypothesis. Mm-hmm. I think that going into any kind of test, you need to have an idea of what you think is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And you may be wrong, but I think it helps you start the ball rolling. And then what would success look like? Is it more traffic? Is it more customers? Is it higher sales per customer? Is it overall sales total? Is it more traffic footfall? Is like, what are those parameters that you want to be measuring against? And then that will help guide you across multiple parameters. Did it hit your metrics that you thought was going to happen, or did it fall short, or was it, you know, just right in zone? That's mm-hmm. that I think helps get everyone on the same page from a conversation standpoint early on, so that what you don't want to do is at the end of a test, people are scratching their heads, was it successful? Because mm-hmm. then you sort of failed at the communication part. So I'm a big believer of setting out what the goals should be up front. Goals do not always have to be only sales. But they need to be measurable, and they need to make everyone feel like what element that they're involved in is going to be measured in a way that makes it productive.
Yeah. And across that conversation, you're going to have people that I think are well-versed in data. They're going to have, you know, different KPIs of their own for their business lines and how it all comes together. One of the things that you talk about with your analytics background is believing that, you know, the relationship between data, and that's where you talk about magic and logic. So data without the story is a failure. So just talk a little bit too about how you see creativity and data coexisting.
Yeah, great. I think when you're in the business of offering experience, offering joy, offering excitement, and honestly, you know, what we sell, some people might consider them total basic needs, but most people would consider them many wants. I think when you're in that business, you need to be offering more than just a value price relationship. You need to be offering more than just a commodity transaction. You need to be offering that emotion, that smile factor, that fun, that heartwarming moment of wanting to make a purchase for whatever that want is. When you're in that space, I think it's really important that you don't rely so much on the data. And the reason I say that is because the data by definition is going to be historical. Mm-hmm. And yes, you can sort of do modeling on the go forward and you can try to project out what might happen. But the reality is that you can use the information historical to give you some kind of sense of potential opportunity of market size or category opportunity. You can use that as a guide. But what you really are looking to do is let the creativity and let the inspiration move your consumer in such a way that gets them excited for the next thing. And that is where the data is a great informing. It helps you to inform, but it's not going to necessarily set your goals. And it's not going to necessarily set the business plan forward. So I think the creativity, we as a company here at Anthropology, we really celebrate the creativity part, everything from the person who's designing the store windows to the person who's designing the imagery and shooting all the imagery for our stores, to the designers who are creating the product, to the team who's creating the collateral and the bags and the mailers that go out to every customer's door at millions at a time over the course of a day. So those are the things that make you smile when you see our brand. And that is the part that we always like to always celebrate, the people behind those moments and the product itself, of course. The data is this becomes like a language that we can use to sort of track and review how we're doing, but it's really the emotion that one gets when they walk into a store. And when I look at my own satisfaction, what I'm excited about is that, you know, if I look back from here versus 5 years ago, we have literally millions more customers shopping our brand. And that's what makes me super excited, that we have that many more people who are spending time, consciously spending their efforts, consciously spending time in our stores or on our site and spending their money with us. And that is what makes me excited. And that for me is probably the biggest success metric that I look at. Number of customers and how many of their times they're coming back and how they're engaging with our brand.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, Anthropology is so known for the story that starts from the curb. You know, it starts from the outside, the windows. And one of the things we also talked about at the conference was also the balance you play of being in this national brand or, you know, a little bit international. But you also have that local aspect when you talk about the emotional connection, too. Yeah. Maybe you could touch upon that for a second and how you're balancing that out. Is that consistent brand DNA from a global standpoint, but then those purposeful interjections of local presence and recognition that I think also drives that emotional connection.
Yeah. A lot of people don't realize that all of our seasonal themes are sort of conceptualized here in our home office in Philadelphia. And those ideas and themes are then shared with our store teams, our visual teams, who truly are groups of artists in regions throughout the whole country. And then they take that theme and they make it regionally relevant for their store and for their market. So, you know, it's not like we have a big warehouse that puts all of our in-store visuals and creates 200 plus visuals that then get shipped out to all the stores. Actually, it's much more reverse engineered than that, if you will. We might have a concept, and then each store says, how does that concept come to life in my market? How does that concept make sense for my market? So in New York City, that concept, I'll take the holiday concept, which was just very appropriately so called, that Anthromagic. And it was the idea of this fantastical, trees made out of all this wool and you know, basically fantastical trees. In Phoenix, that might have been a cactus. Mm-hmm. In Florida, that might have been a palm tree. So the idea of like making holiday come alive in this very organic way, with this great sort of creative touch and this hand touch, that was consistent. That framework was consistent, but the actual articulation of that might have varied by market. And we celebrate that. Like that was a celebration. That wasn't you went off course. That was actually the opposite. You actually were completely on course and you made it be regionally relevant to the store at hand.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's also becomes an additional draw because it creates this like subliminal neighborhood relationship in each one of your destinations.
So many of our best customers, they literally know all of our sales associates by name and vice versa. And they come to our stores on a weekly basis. And it's because it is almost, you know, we hear it all the time that Anthropologie is their happy place. Like they come, they come there knowing that they're going to have a smile on their face. And if that's all they leave with is a smile, I still see that as a success. Because if this is a place they're going to choose to spend their time and it's going to give them an emotional, you know, high for the day, then that is success to me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it builds that brand equity and longevity. So you've talked a lot in this conversation. I think a lot of people who are listening, getting some insights on how do I get started, right? And how do I marry data and creativity, magic and logic, and how do I bring in the right stakeholders and how do I test and measure? So I think that's a good starting point. Before we go, I want to think a little future with you because I think it's good to plant some seeds. From where you're sitting in the lens that you have, what are two or three things that you're really excited about when you think about the opportunity of the consumer and where brands can go?
Oh, gosh. There's so many things that are exciting. I think that if I think about Anthropologie specifically, what I think is wonderful about what we've done in the past couple of years and where we're headed even further in the future is that people have always known Anthropologie as a place to go to find that special something for that special moment. Mm-hmm. It's that dress to wear for, you know, their birthday party, or it's the outfit to wear for a bridal shower. Like there's always things that people come to for those special moments. But where I think that Anthropologie has really done a very good job in the last couple of years, especially, is showing up more relevantly, making every moment special. Hmm. So in other words, not only focusing on the special moments and bringing the special items for the special moments, but actually making Saturday afternoon special, making, hanging out with friends special, making staying home alone special. And how do we bring the items that are going to make you feel special, even if they're not, quote unquote, a special moment? So it's sort of like moving from the special days to the everydays. And how have we actually shown up in a relevant way, not only on those special special times, but more so on all the time. And that, I think, has been a nice shift because it's allowed us, and we have the right to play in more end uses of your of your daily schedule, of your weekly schedule, of your seasonal schedule. And that's been really fun. You know, a great example of that is the launch of our brand called Daily Practice. And Daily Practice is the idea that whatever your daily practice is, if your daily practice is going for a jog in the morning, fabulous. But if your daily practice is taking the dog for a walk and then having a coffee with your girlfriends, that's great too. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily only focused on the athletic part of athleisure. It's also focused on the leisure or the me time moment of your wardrobe, and making sure that people were coming to Anthropologie and they could find those things for those moments in their day, in their week, in their schedule. So that I think has been something that's been very exciting. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, owning wallet share ultimately starts with owning mind share. Mm-hmm. And if you can try to bridge the gap between mind share and then dive for heart share, if you can get to heart share, you know, beating heart share, then you can get to wallet share. Mm-hmm. So I think that we have the right to own those moments of joy in someone's life. We've proven that. We see that all the time. How do we make more moments be joyful in their life, even if they're not necessarily a special moment in their calendar?
I love that.
So that's what excites me.
I love that. And you're also like fueling empowerment, right? Because like you said, it's like not just me feeling, oh, I have this special occasion, so I have to dress up. It's like showing up for myself in every moment of my own life, and you're helping support that as a brand.
Yeah. And honestly, it's also inspiring people to be creative in their own choices, you know, in their own choices of what they want to try and wear and style. And it's giving them the confidence to do so and celebrating with them in doing so.
Yeah, I love that. All right. Well, thank you so much for all of these insights and the inspiration today. I mean, I'm sure I took notes while we were talking. I'm sure people who are listening to this will be taking notes, and we'll all continue to follow all the amazing things that come out of Anthropologie. But again, everybody, this is Elizabeth Price. She is the Global Chief Marketing Officer at Anthropologie. Really appreciate your time and your insights today. Thank you for being on.
Thank you, Melissa. Pleasure. Always good to see you.
You too.